Thank you. I made this pretty long.
Thank you very much.
My name is Karen Dixon, and I'm a shareholder of Council Native Corporation, newly elected president of Council Native Corporation. I'd like to say that I agree with Gary Longley's testimony and Lila Oman's testimony. I feel that the Native Land Claims Act has had a significant impact on the Native people in that it has given them money and land and the power to do what they will with it, whatever they decide is fair for all people. One thing that we must remember is what, quote, the old folks have taught us, that we all have to learn to live together, that the prejudice that I feel has come about from the Native Land Claims Act, we must set that aside and continue to make things smooth for the coming years. It's easy to sit back and say, well, years and years ago, when the Native Land Claims Act was first originated, it's easy, hindsight is better than foresight, right? It's easy to sit back and say, well, we didn't know this and we didn't know that, so it's time to become educated, to learn all that we possibly can, and to look to the future and make provisions for the afterborns, for the people that were unknowledgeable of the Native allotments, the BLM Native allotments. We need to educate the young people because they are the ones that are going to take over in the coming years. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to comment on the act and the effects that it has on us and our children. I am Nayumaruk. My English name is Carolyn Schubert. I'm enrolled to the village of Chautla, or Council as it's known today. I have three children who are also enrolled to Council. They're Edward Schubert, Evan Schubert, and Francis Schubert. I have a fourth child. His name is Hans. He was born after the act was passed, and he's not eligible for benefits under it, and I'm sure so many of you have children like that. My testimony covers a number of issues. However, I will try to be brief. I touched briefly on the first issue involving the Alaska Native Land Claims Act, with which I disagree. And that is the fact that a child born after 1971 is not eligible for benefits under the Act. How could Congress presume to have the right to deny benefits from an Act without first having consulted with those involved directly in the denial of benefits? I'm certain Congress was aware in establishing a cutoff date a division would occur between the eligibles and the ineligibles. United we can stand, divided we will fall. In setting up the division amongst the Alaska Native peoples, Congress was wise enough to see we could or would bring about our own failing through setting up those who would be eligible versus those who would be ineligible. Another issue we face is the enrollment to our village of persons who claimed false ties to our village. At page 25 of the Alaska Native Claims Appeal Board decision of September 11, 1974, the administrative law judge found the two families could not be counted as permanent residents of council for village eligibility purposes. Yet these two families have continued to be carried on our village eligibility rolls. In discussions with our elders of our village, we don't know how these individuals were ever certified to our village. What is known that in the case of one individual, he claimed eligibility to council while serving in the capacity of enrollment coordinator for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. I ask Congress to allow us to remove these families from our village rolls. Some reasons why such drastic measures should be sought. The same individual enrolled to Council Native Corporation, later became head of the Bering Straits Native Corporation. He and the head of household of the second family enrolled to council worked together to force the village of Solomon to agree to the construction of the bridges across Safety Sound and Bonanza Channel in exchange for continued support from Bering Strait Native Corporation during the appeal process of Solomon Native Corporation. According to the current officers of Solomon Native Corporation, Solomon was told, quote, either cease your objections to the bridges or no more money toward your appeal. To further stress their point, an officer of Solomon Native Corporation had his head forced into a toilet bowl by these individuals. If that's not reason enough, members of these families publicly state they wish no longer to affiliate themselves with Council Native Corporation, and they would have sold their stock a long time ago if a mechanism had been in place to do so. It's quite obvious that they have no intention to either support or involve themselves with the affairs of the corporation. No other individuals properly enrolled to council have ever made or would consider doing that. Congress set up a program allowing each village corporation to grant home sites to shareholders. These two families support the commercial utilization of these, quote, home sites, unquote, contrary to the understanding and support of the original village residents. Since members of the families wish to sell their shares of stock already, it would appear that their only aim in receiving land would be to sell to the highest bidder. I ask Congress to set up strict mandatory restrictions on the home site program against sale or commercialization of home site lots. One other issue involved the utilization of trust monies belonged to Council Native Corporation by the Bering Strait Native Corporation in the region's investments. Members of these families were sitting as members of the board of Bering Straits Native Corporation at the time of these illegal actions. It's proved to be a difficult task for residents and shareholders of council to work with outsiders whose feelings and actions are for exploitation of our corporation. Hopefully Congress will give us a mechanism to remove from our rolls those individuals not properly enrolled to our village. Further, that Congress will enact tighter restrictions on the home site program. That Congress will establish a mechanism for involvement of the, quote, afterborns, unquote. And finally, that Congress will continue to work with the corporation on the restriction of the sale of stock received under ANCSA. Hoyana.
Could I have a copy of your statement?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Schubert.
My name is Caleb Pangali. I'm enrolled to Simungan Native Corporation, and I also have inherited stocks through the Sinisok Native Corporation from my father. Today I'm testifying as an individual, and I would like to have opportunity later on to testify on behalf of a nonprofit corporation. As I stated earlier, I am enrolled to Simungan Native Corporation, which is a 19B reserve corporation in that it has received title to the reservation lands, fee simple, and has not shared in the monies that are given by through the Alaska Native Claim Settlement. or some of the other requirements under the Claim Settlement Act. One of the restrictions that apply to the reservation corporation is that we are restricted from owning regional corporation shares under the Claim Settlement Act. While I have inherited shares, I have not challenged whether these inherited shares fall under the that particular requirement of restricting regional corporation shares from 19 reservation shareholders. Under the reservation program, since we did not receive the money similar to the other Native corporations, we were not pressured to invest the money or try to form into a corporation that would be making profit. Instead, we went through the same motions like any other corporations I'm having, elect board of directors and conduct annual meetings and do the same things that another corporation does. But without the money, we're not in the same process like the other corporations. The other avenue that we're not same in the other corporations is that we don't have to transfer lands under 14C of the Claim Settlement Act, in that all the lands belong to the corporations, both Gamble Native Corporation and Savunga Native Corporation. But one thing that our people fell short on was under the Alaska Native Allotment Act, or Native Allotment Act, in that when the people applied for Native allotments on St. Lawrence Island, their allotment applications were denied by the federal government because the land that they applied for was a federal reserve, and therefore not qualified for selection under the Native Allotment Act. And same has fallen true with other people that may have applied for Native allotments that were on federal reserves, be it Coast Guard or military reserves, and that has happened to my father-in-law as well. One of the things that I feel that was a major mistake made by our Native leaders in the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act was the extinguishment of the Aboriginal fishing and hunting rights. I think that this particular section, although they may have been, or people in the Congress may have been afraid that there'd be some management problems or that there may be some fights concerning the hunting and fishing rights, there probably could have been a mechanism in that the Aboriginal fishing and hunting rights could have remained. Currently under the subsistence priority law, most of the Native people, in essence, serve to have this Aboriginal fishing and hunting rights in that they have priority to hunt and fish if the resources should drop to a level that the priority is required. Under the management scheme, with the Indian in the lower 48 having some of their Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights, had not run into the management problems except for the fact that where there is competition between commercial fishing or hunting, that there may be some friction in regards to Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights. The 14C requirements, I feel, is also another problem with an Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, in that the communities in which the lands must be transferred to, as they become larger and incorporate and annex lands outside of the current existing boundaries, that the land that will be eventually transferred over to the communities will become enlarged and the Native corporation lands become smaller, either through taxation or annexation. The land claims, and I must agree to some extent, has been helpful. It has united us. It has made a political force within the state of Alaska. It also has organized us on a regional entity that has provided opportunities for many of us for employment or to seek other benefits or betterments for our people. The claim settlement, I think a lot of times we see it as, in some cases, some of us may see it with guilt, that we're made to look at it as if we're receiving something that we're not entitled to, when in fact we have lost tremendous to receive the Alaska Native Claim Settlement. And as more and more people come into this community, as more and more people come into the region, we'll see more and more pressure for us to share the lands that belong to us, or else have trespassers, homesteaders, other people use the lands that we're currently have entitlement to, and that these other people will make us feel guilty for the land that we rightfully own. And it is these things that we must look out for in the future. As far as those children born after 1971, I too feel that they should be allowed into the claim settlement without restriction, just like all of us who have enrolled to the village corporations or the regional corporations, that they too have the same right as we have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bengali.
Yes, I'm Peter Buck, member of White Mountain Native Corporation and Vice Mayor of White Mountain, and also President of the IRA Council in White Mountain. And I just have one question. In 1936, the IRA Councils were formed, and this was under act of government. And the past 2 years, the United Tribes of Alaska were formed. And I'm just wondering, how much substance would they have in the United Tribes, the IRA Councils, and that act, since they have sovereignty and everything, or are planning for sovereignty, how much substance would they have if they said that ANSCA was unauthorized? And I've heard a lot of talk about that. I was wondering what was your opinion was that of?
Well, Congress passed ANCSA, and the courts in Alaska, the state courts, and the federal courts in Alaska both regard Congress as the as authorized to pass ANCSA under the Constitution. I think, in fact, the courts in the USA have held that ANCSA was legislation that Congress was authorized to pass. So I think that it's there. The state and the federal government have selected their lands. The native corporations are selecting their lands. Everybody has proceeded on the footing that ANCSA was a law that Congress was authorized to pass. The courts haven't held it to be unconstitutional. So there it is. Now, if I were you, I wouldn't mix that up. I mean, trying to go back 13 years and say you shouldn't have done that, it was illegal and unconstitutional, I wouldn't mix that up with going forward and saying, if this is what United Tribes of Alaska are saying, that tribal governments should be recognized under state law, and that their powers of local government and even in relation to fish and game and subsistence should be acknowledged, and that they should be the instruments for native self-determination. That's it seems to me that's quite another matter that will unfold depending on the what Alaska Natives want to do. But I think it unlikely you can go back and say that ANCSA is unconstitutional. Now, I know that the view has been expressed that under international law it should never have been passed, but since the courts in Alaska enforce the laws passed by Congress do not enforce international law, there's not much left to argue about. Yes, sir.
this is me again. Can we appeal this law? Like doing it all over again? At first, we didn't understand anything about anything, yeah. So.
Well, Congress has already changed ANCSA half a dozen times. It changed it in 1976 and again in 1980. So you're always entitled to go to Congress and say, look, some mistakes were made and we want some changes. In that sense, you can still appeal it.
Okay, thank you.
A little bit scared, but I'm Hans Jimmo from Elam, and as many of you know, we're same status with Savunga Native and Gamble Native Corporation. The people of Elam own the land. Well, 3 hours ago, they asked me, you want to go to Nome to attend this meeting? So I didn't have, out of the blue, I came to know.
Well, but, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you're here.
Well, but anyway, I had the pleasure of seeing you in action up at Barrow when they had that elders conference up at Barrow just recently. And I asked my son, he's a Native Corporation president, what issues should I try to bring out in this meeting. Well, he said, we're happy about the Native Settlement Act because we own our land. But looking at this paper here, what is important to you, and there's up before that, there's past, present, and future. Well, 50 years ago, I was 14 years old. So, at that time, I used to hear stories that the natives, the elders, went through when the white man first came. And the stories, some of them stories I hear, why come back to me when this Native Settlement Act, you know, was enacted. At that time, the first white people had business people come up here and bring trades and stuff like that. I hear they used to sell a rifle with piled fur till it's same level with a standing rifle. And when you think of that, those natives were cheated. And it's been just like a lot of good white people come, but there's those people that come. And thinking back, in one of the papers I read, I forgot who wrote it, but it's put out in Alaska. Somebody said in 1991, the business world, the barracudas will be there to grab land, shares from the people here. The barracudas, I don't know what kind of fish that is, but it must be a fierce fish. Well, that's thinking to the future. At present, we're happy. And thinking back what the regional corporations went through, not only Nome, Bering Strait regional corporations, they lost millions of dollars to these same barracudas, just like they did in the past when they measured that rifle with furs. In 1991, they'll be there to buy our shares if we don't prepare for that 1991. So that's what I'm thinking about right now. My few shares, I might not be around, but somebody with my grandchildren will own those shares. And with that business barracuda coming, why really make me think of what my people will lose. Right now we're happy. We like the way land claims were settled. We didn't share in the money, but we think we own the land, and I want my grandchildren to own the land when I'm gone. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. At Elam, you own the subsurface and the surface resources,
don't you?
That's
what we understand, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like
St. Lawrence Island.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir.
I am very happy to be given this opportunity. My name is Job Kukuchurk, the member of White Mountain Corporation. It is good to speak to a group of unconquered people of Alaska. As far as I know, these are the remains of the huge wars that go between villages in Alaska. That was true with Fish River people. They were unconquered for 4 to 5 generations. They've been invaded by Indians and by people from Kuskokwim. They all were killed, and none hardly go back. Why? Because we had two mountains. Close to White Mountain, there is a mountain that have certain kind of rocks where we have a place where we can make arrowheads. Then we have a mountain up in the Fish River Head which has silver, which the natives there use for their bow and arrows and for their spears. But ever since that time, we have been invaded deceitfully. Many of the natives here were not versed like the lawyers that United States sent up to talk with us, or that sent us the papers. Many of the neighbors never can hardly read the regulations and rules that they required of us. Therefore, it gives me a pleasure, great pleasure, to be given an opportunity. I wish the foreigners that trot in our villages had first sat down with the natives like the way we are. I believe none of our grandpas wouldn't give away no foot from each of our hunting areas. For we were full rulers of our surrounding villages. We make sure that there were no people from other places taking over our hunting grounds. But today, I am glad that we can sit down after we have a few of our men and women that go to higher schools to make use of this arrangement that they put upon us. Why? When the white man gonna take the mountain in the Fish River, they had to gun down two of the Eskimos in White Mountain. Why? Because they had just bow and arrow. Since that time, natives in the surrounding area were afraid of white man. They had fear. Why? They had better weapons. That's why we let them freely into our villages, thinking that they would help us and give us education. We didn't know eventually they would work with the papers and talk among themselves down in Washington, D.C. without the presence of any of our chiefs from our villages to sit and understand what they're going to do about our country up here. That's why I believe our problem is we are slow in catching up with our rulers that come afar. For we were the people up here that respect the ground and the home of each person. We never take over none of the natives' land or hunting ground by force. But today, by using their regulation, my wife obtained 2 parcels of land in Fish River. We follow all the regulations and put a cabins on our grounds and caches. But after about 5-6 years, when we go to our land, there were stakes, load claims right over our land. Right then, I find out I've been tricked. Now the white man owns below the grass. Now my wife only owns the trees and the grass above it. I can't do nothing much about that ground because it belonged to someone else. I believe if they're left alone, they would do like the men down in Bluff that were hunting seals. They made an igloo. White men come along and dug under their igloo. They had to get out of there. I can see with this agreement that they made by themselves down there without consulting us, our subsistence rights, hunting rights, going to be taken away, which our forefathers would never give an inch to. I believe if they had the better weapons, our forefathers would never have permitted them to land, even if they knew. That's why I believe this problem will continue on as we are slowly stripped of our rights in our own land in Alaska. That's what I see for myself. Now I've been asked to speak on behalf of some elders.
No, please do.
Consulting with elders, they have a promise of getting the money, which they look forward to ever since it passed. Many of them are under the ground now before they receive their share. But what remains, this is their word, what they gave me before, if I happen to sit before whoever have authority regarding their shares. They're half of the elders like to get their share right now. since they're 70 years old. They're not sure whether they'll be able to live until they get hold of that money. So when 1991 comes, everyone who is 70 years old, they like to get hold of that while they're alive. So they can use that money the way they want it, without the help of their grandsons or sons. They think they can worry about their own income when their time comes too. So one view. Second view, there are kind grandmas and grandpas, I find out. They said, let our corporations handle their money. We elders can live pretty good now with bonus, as long as the bonus lasts. That's kind of questionable too now, all right. I hope it can make it a couple of years anyway. Seems like if that should phase off, they will want that share of theirs, because they said they can live pretty good now with that bonus. It's good for our young men that had gone to higher schools to work in their corporations that have a higher school, so they can have a job and do a lot of office work so they can have a job. I guess that's about all I can say. Regarding that allotment, I'd like to talk a little more. When I buy a piece of ground here in 1950s in Nome, I bought a ground and a house from white man, and I get a deed with it. I had a full say on that. Right down to the bedrock, I owned that house. That's the white man's arrangement for themselves, not Eskimo now I'm talking. When I go to Anchorage, they were giving away parcels, 2.5 acres. You had to put a cabin there and pay for the land. When I get that deed, I got a deed right down to the gravel and the bedrock. I wonder why, when they make our piece of paper like that, they give us a grass rights and a willow rights only. Those of us that didn't have much education grabbed for that piece of paper thinking it was just as solid as can be. One of the Eskimos I talked to that had mineral under his land, he said he staked right over the allotment. I tell him, that's no good. Somebody gonna come around and stake your ground. Grass and willows are only yours. See, how come the white man arranged that land for Eskimos like that? Even, is it because they didn't go to school? So you see, they really believed that piece of paper. They thought it was just as solid as the one you pass among yourself. But you make us different. White man shouldn't make Eskimo different. When I was in the army, I find out I can't follow white man when they're gonna be sent to Far East. They dumped me off at ADAC. They said, you're an Eskimo. I was the only Eskimo in the Air Corps Engineers. They said, you can't go, Job, you're an Eskimo. Then I had to talk to man from Congress. I tell him I'm American. And Aleutians is not like Alaska. It has a different country. They didn't know that Alaska was a big country. And that Aleutian was like a foreign country to me. It had an altogether different climate than this part of Alaska. That, ever since that time, they began to wake up that Eskimos were treated differently. Now it's a regulation to send any Eskimo. Why? Because my company commander turned me in and said, Job, your complaint win. Eskimos will go be able to be trained down in California or anywhere. Now, I like to have this fixed, what they arranged in Washington, D.C., giving us only the surface rights to 160 acres that they passed out to us. Any white man can stake over it. What would they say if I go to Anchorage now and start staking a road claim right in the city? I would raise a big confusion there and complaints. When white man arranged that paper, they should make it same as they give their papers to their fellow man. See, they should have been same. That's one complaint I got.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm the one that have opportunity.
Maybe I could just answer the question by saying that in the native allotments, sometimes, that is the 160 acres, sometimes the allotment reserved the mineral rights, the subsurface rights to the federal government, sometimes it didn't even appear in the certificate that the person holding the allotment received. But it should be pointed out that the land received by the corporations since 1971 includes surface and subsurface. The regional corporations get the subsurface. So the 44 million acres, the native people received both surface and subsurface. So in that sense, the injustice that you rightly point out in connection with the allotment, sir, was not repeated under ANCSA. Yeah, I think I'm going to get an argument on this.
I thought we were only allowed subsurface when we find anything precious like gold or silver. We can't do anything else but just subsurface.
Yeah.
But is that changed or?
Well, it depends on the allotment because sometimes they reserved iron and coal and other things. But you'd have to look at your own certificate of allotment. But normally, as Mr. Chuck said, the subsurface was withheld by the federal government in the allotments. But my point is that in the land received under ANCSA, Native people got the subsurface as well as the surface.
Well, if we find any gold, like walking out in the country where our land is not ours, like governments, if we find a bunch of gold there just on the surface, what can we do about it? We can't stake a claim or nothing?
I can't answer that, but if you find any gold out there and you want to phone me about it, I'll be happy to.
I think you just got to take it.
Well, that might be good advice.
Well, anyhow, somebody's going to ask you where you get this gold from. Some certain place that belongs to the government, yeah. Right?
Well, I think that the government reserved subsurface resources in a lot of those allotments. I think that I think that if you find the gold, if I were you, I'd. I know this is something.
Just keep it secret, huh?
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm Raymond Pong from Gullah, Alaska, and I belong to the Traditional Council.
Yes, sir.
And I'm kind of worried about what the Gullah and Traditional Council elected me on the board for. But see, I'm the type of a guy that is a wandering generality, a man without no plans, you know. People like you guys make me realize that there's a lot of meaning to this here. You guys are people that really put meaning to it. Made me realize what's going wrong. Now the question I have is why did the state make selections on the natives' selection, took over on the coastline especially, where natives made their living? They already had their campsites there, and they made them into cemetery sites, where that really, really belongs to the natives, because that's, I believe our buried fathers would want their land to go to their poor children, you know. And that's something I can't understand. And there's another one. These so-called miners, these offshore miners,